VentureCast.
This week on the Deep Leadership Podcast.
I think that the really high-performing teams excel at conflict in the sense that they excel at encouraging and really engaging with dissent and divergent thinking and divergent ideas and opinions.
Hi, and welcome to Deep Leadership. I'm your host, John Rennie. Well, I hope all is well with you today. It is a warm and sunny day here in North Carolina. And this episode is brought to you by our sponsors, LeaderConnect, Ignite Management Services, and Liberty Strength. These sponsors help me bring these shows to you each and every week, so I encourage you to click on their links below and check them out. Now, I'm excited to announce that our next episode will be a very special one. It'll be our 300th episode, and you're not going to want to miss it. Neil Woodson will be returning to the show to launch his brand new book, Giving a Shit: How a Willingness to be Inconvenienced Can Transform Your Business, Work, and Life. I'm excited to have written the foreword to this amazing new book about the importance of service. Now, Neil and I will be giving away 30 signed copies of this book when this episode airs on April 3rd. So the first 30 listeners to subscribe and comment on the YouTube video of that episode will get a free copy of this fantastic new leadership book shipped directly to your home. So subscribe to the Deep Leadership Podcast on YouTube today so you don't miss out on this special episode when it airs. Well, that is it. Now, in today's episode of the Deep Leadership Podcast, I'm joined by Grayson James. He's the CEO of Full Contact Institute. Grayson joins me to talk about insights from his brand new book, Full Contact Performance: The Internal Art of Organizational Collaboration. We sat down and discussed the importance of collaborative leadership and the three key conversations of organizational collaboration. These are learning, design, and fulfillment. Now, I love this insightful conversation, and I know you will as well. So, are you ready to dive in? Let's get started.
Welcome to Deep Leadership. Leadership is a people business. That's the philosophy of your podcast host, John Rennie. As a former Cold War submarine officer who spent 20 plus years leading businesses in corporate America before starting his own manufacturing business, he knows that leadership matters. Leadership matters. Are you ready for some real world actionable advice from John as well as his expert guests?
I'm ready.
I'm ready.
I'm ready.
The show starts right now.
Welcome to the Deep Leadership Podcast. Today, I'm joined by Grayson James. Grayson is the CEO of Full Contact Institute. For over 30 years, he has taken an uncommon approach to helping executives, boards, and senior management teams transform their collaborative business performance. He is the former CEO of a nationally acclaimed multi-campus private school system and a sixth-degree black belt in Aikido. In his latest book, Full Contact Performance: The Internal Art of Organizational Collaboration, Grayson helps leaders understand what it takes to become better collaborators. And I'm excited to have him on the show to talk about the internal art of collaborative leadership. So Grayson, welcome to the show.
Thanks, John. Really good to be with you.
It is great to meet you. And I'm excited to talk about this. Collaboration is something very important to leadership. And in 300 episodes, we haven't talked about it. So I'm excited to have an expert on board to talk about it. So get us started. In general, what is collaboration?
Well, for me, it's really pretty simple. It's getting important things done with other people. Like at its most basic, that's all it is. We do it all the time. And most of the time, it goes pretty well. Except when it doesn't. And that's usually when either we're dealing with complex challenges or tough problems, whether they're tough people problems or tough situational problems. And that's where we usually encounter challenges. So that's really what my work is about and what this book is about, is how do we learn how to deal with those challenges, those challenging collaborative situations in new ways.
That's exciting. I mean, I think about all the times that in the different companies I worked for, where, like you said, it's working with other people to get things done, right? That where it goes wrong. And it seems like more than often it went wrong. So give us a flavor when an organizational collaboration goes right, what's it like versus when it goes wrong?
Yeah. Well, when it goes right, we've all experienced this. It feels like people have a shared view of what they're doing together. Their expectations are well aligned with what's actually showing up in each other, in each other's behaviors. And good stuff happens. Results get produced that we're hoping for or better. And generally, the tone of the conversations feel pretty even, if not kind of buoyant. Things feel pretty easy, like we're in some kind of a flow together. And you know, when it's not, of course, things feel jammed up. We get uptight. We get anxious, angry. We can go into all sorts of places around blame and accusation and feeling like victims or feeling righteous. All of that stuff happens with pretty much all of us when we're pushed far enough. And good stuff isn't happening. And sometimes we're just not sure why.
Yeah, I know. I think about projects I've been on in the past where, boy, it, like you said, it's a flow state. Like everything is just, you know, like I would tell you on a submarine, right? So when you know, our team, when, you know, we'd been operating so long together, I knew what everybody was going to do before they did it. Like we were a well-oiled machine. We had practiced it so many times that we never missed. Every time we go to the range and we shoot torpedoes, we never missed because we were just a finely oiled machine. And I've been on other teams where we're tripping over each other. People are getting angry. People are getting upset. And it's amazing. And it's just, it's the same. It's a group of people. But we couldn't get along. We couldn't get things done. Mm-hmm. We were always in conflict. And so I've been in both of it. So I know what it feels like when it works. And it's so frustrating when it doesn't work, right?
Yeah.
And I think we all experience that sometime in our careers.
Yeah, you know, I liked what you said. You said we practice together so much. Now, let's just take that concept for a moment. Now, think about organizational life. How many teams would actually say, we have practiced collaborating together so much that we just never miss?
No,
you never, you would never hear that. You just wouldn't hear it. I've never heard that.
Yeah, you're right.
And
yeah.
There are a couple of reasons for it, I think. One is that the notion of practice, we generally don't apply to things like collaborating and communicating, to listening, to helping each other think together in new ways, to inviting dissenting views and working through complex problems together, to learn together. So we don't associate practice with those types of activities. And then the other thing is we don't actually take the time, and of course they're related, we don't take the time to practice working together well. We work together, everyone's doing their best. Smart people, creative people, committed people get together, they do their best. Sometimes it works great, sometimes it doesn't. And when it doesn't, folks don't always have a very clear sense of why that is, and therefore what to do differently. How can you practice if you're not really sure what you should be practicing, even if you do have the notion that we should be practicing something, but what? What does that actually look like in an organization?
Yeah, I love that you said that, you know, sometimes when it goes wrong, you don't know why. And I would say that that's a characteristic of all the teams I was on that didn't go well. Hard to tell why, you know?
Yeah.
And you could make a list of what you think is the reason, but part of it is, like you said, we weren't rehearsed, we weren't practiced, It was an unnatural situation. Everybody was maybe in it for themselves, and our agendas were not aligned, and you know, and it was failure as a result. And it happens way too many times. So that's why this is such an important conversation. So I wanted to switch a little bit to you talk about collaborative leadership in this as this term, full contact performance. Now, that seems interesting to me. So explain this distinction in how you explain collaborative leadership.
Yeah. Well, I took the name from the martial arts. And in martial arts, there are different ways of training together, different ways of learning and working on your skills. And, one way, and certain martial arts really focus much more on this, on a type of practice called full contact sparring, where you don't hold back. You usually are wearing some kind of protective gear and you go at it. And you, because that's how you learn what you're actually good at, what you need to keep working on. The pressure is on and you can still get hurt even if you're wearing protective gear, of course. You're not trying to hurt each other. You're trying to really land your strikes and punches, however, and because you have to know how to do that. And if you're always holding back and going, you know, half speed or half effort, you'll never really know what it is to go full out. And you won't know how to deal with somebody who is going full out. So I see the same thing in organizations. The beautiful thing about full contact training is you just learn a lot about yourself. Mm. And you also learn about how to deal with other people who are not holding back. In organizations, it's kind of similar. You can sit in on a group and see how people often hold themselves back for all sorts of reasons. They don't want to embarrass each other. They don't want to embarrass themselves. They don't want to say something that makes them seem stupid. They don't want to say something that could provoke conflict or confrontation. People will freeze up. They'll get uptight. They'll get angry. And generally, people aren't good at dealing with those situations, so we tend to avoid them. Mm-hmm. And what that turns into is a lot of meetings and conversations where many people are holding back. Now, not everybody. There's usually some people in a group who will go all out. And even some groups where I'll start working with an executive team, for instance, and you know, when I first meet with them, I'll hear things like, well, we are a team. We don't hold back. We're straight shooters. We say what's on our mind. And you'd think that that's full contact, but it isn't always full contact. It's just full impulsivity very often.
Mm, yeah.
I would rather see a team that doesn't hold back, but also knows how to reflect on what they're doing and how they're doing it together than just a team that goes all out telling everybody what's going on with them and talking straight where there's no reflection, because those are pretty weak teams. There's often a lot of fear. There's a lot of aggression and they mistake straight talk for effective talk, for effective conversations. So they're not the same thing. I think for full contact to be meaningful, we have to be reflecting on what we're doing, both while we're doing it, which is harder to do, of course, but certainly after, you know, at the end of a conversation, well, how did we do? How did we actually, we were just doing a conversation together. How did that go from your perspective? Here's how it went from my perspective. What do we think we could have done differently? This goes back to the practice theme. We're not used to doing that because we don't really see conversations as a domain of skill that can be reflected on together and worked on and improved and transformed, actually. So full contact in an organization is where people know how to really share their views, their ideas, their world perspectives, to disagree with each other, to challenge each other's thinking, and to do it in a way that allows people to learn, to keep learning together, rather than to get stuck and frozen in discomfort or fear or embarrassment.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. You know, if I think back, in some of the research I've read on team formation, right? And one of the things they talk about is there's two different kinds of conflict that occur in team formation. One is task conflict. This is a team that's doing well, and they have conflict on the best way to move forward, right? But they're working in a collaborative way to solve it, right? And so that conflict is actually necessary to build trust, because you're having a back and forth, and you're willing to be you're willing to be vulnerable with your ideas and you don't get shot down because of a team that's working together. So task conflict is considered to be a good thing in team formation. But personal conflict, right? And is considered when you have a personal conflict with each other and you were, you know, and so you have one individual that's maybe taking over for the team and trying to bully other people, trying to get their way, is focused on personal agenda versus the team agenda. That's a terrible thing for a team, right? So there's the conflict is not necessarily a bad thing, right? It actually can be a good thing, but you have to get to the point where the team has built some level of trust and collaboration where they can, you know, work on tasks and have that conflict and disagree disagree to the point where they're looking for the best solution, not disagree to the point where they're pointing fingers and blame and it's complete dysfunction. So conflict itself is not bad. It's just how is that conflict manifesting itself?
Yeah, how are we relating to that? I really like that distinction you made between the different types of conflict. I think that the really high-performing teams excel at conflict in the sense that they excel at encouraging and really engaging with dissent and divergent thinking and divergent ideas and opinions. And rather than that being a weakness, it becomes their strength because they know how to work with it.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That's not easy to do. You know, that often takes some work and practice together.
Yeah. I mean, you know, to be honest, you'd think like on a submarine, everybody was pretty chill, but we were pretty intense individuals, but we deeply trusted each other. But you get called out though, if someone did something wrong or so we were willing to have a little, you know, have those battles, but we implicitly trusted each other, but we were willing to, you know, to battle for the right idea to make sure that we're always the mission came first. And so we did fight, but it was meant to be towards that mission. And it was never personal. It was always like, you know, I think we should dive deep. We should do this. And like, but if we do that, this is going to happen. And you're like, oh, you're right. Let's go with your idea. So there was always, sometimes very intense, but we loved each other, trusted each other. And it was always mission, trying to get the mission accomplished. So I think it's a great example of where you say conflict isn't necessarily a bad thing. And even emotional conflict is not necessarily a bad thing in a situation like that.
Yeah. You're describing, that sounds like, full contact.
It was full contact, 100%. When you mentioned that, talking about not holding back punches, that's the way we were. We were not holding back our punches because it was life or death decision making, right? So it was definitely, full contact. But again, it was mission first. How can we accomplish the mission? Everybody was on board for the mission. I think
that's clear.
The mission was very clear. Yeah, that's another thing. We talk about it a lot. When you get to corporate, I know for me, at least after leaving the military, going to the corporate, that was the biggest challenge for me is like, I didn't know what the mission was. What was the mission? Was it to make good quality? Was it to make a profit? Was it to grow our sales? I didn't really know what it was, you know? And so I think we get mixed messages when you come into a company, like, what is the mission? I'm not really sure, you know?
Yeah. Really common. Yeah. And often quite hard to pin down.
You'd
think it'd be more straightforward, but it's not. And people aren't even aware that it's not. We often use kind of vague language, generalities, thinking that we're being specific, but we're not.
Yeah.
And it has big ramifications for people precisely because they're not really sure what they're all lined up to, as you guys were on that submarine. But as you said, it's just not always the case in the rest of the world.
We'll be right back after a quick word from our sponsors.
As a leader, you're responsible for the mission and the people assigned to you. Regardless of the size of your team, employees are depending on you for their lives and careers. For the sake of your team and the people who entrust you with this role, you need to master the skills to become a great leader. Best-selling leadership author John Rennie is proud to introduce the Qualified Leadership Book Series. This new series teaches you how to become a people-centered leader. Great leaders know that employees who are respected, appreciated, and allowed to grow will go the extra mile. These books provide real-world leadership wisdom written from a hands-on perspective. If you want to be a more effective leader, this is the one book series you should read this year. This three-book series contains the following best-selling leadership books: I Have the Watch, You Have the Watch, and All in the Same Boat, for one low price of $39.99. Begin your journey to become a leader worth following. Go to johnsrennie.com and get your order in today.
This episode is brought to you by LeaderConnect, a leadership training company and video platform founded by the leadership book author and Deep Leadership Podcast guest, Neil Jurd. LeaderConnect is a video and podcast streaming platform for leaders and teams. Watch it alone or as a team, and each video supports you and your team, allowing you to improve performance and build a great culture. Join hundreds of experts and learn about leadership, planning, public speaking, team building, mindfulness, and a range of other subjects that will help you lead well and build a great team. I'm proud to say that I'm one of the experts on this platform. LeaderConnect is offering a 10% discount to all Deep Leadership listeners. Go to leader-connect.co.uk and enter the code DEEP at checkout. Master your leadership with LeaderConnect.
This episode is brought to you by Ignite Management Services. Ignite is led by Mike Watson, who you might remember from episode 137. Mike and his team believe that everything starts with leadership, whether it's strategy execution or cultural transformation. It's the role of the leader to create the conditions for their people to succeed. The team at Ignite can help you develop critical habits to enhance your leadership capability and transform your business. Ignite Management is now offering the Resilient Leadership Assessment Tool. This is an online questionnaire designed to assess and guide leadership development, coaching, and team building. It provides leaders an opportunity to gain insights into their leadership strengths and development needs. After taking this assessment, you will receive a custom, detailed report that provides practical and actionable recommendations to enhance your effectiveness. I have taken this assessment myself and found it to be extremely valuable in helping me make changes to my leadership approach. Right now, Ignite is offering 15% off the price of this tool to the Deep Leadership audience. Go to ignitemanagement.ca and enter the code START15 at checkout to get started today. You talk about this idea of collaborative leadership as an internal art. Explain that. I think when I read that, I was thinking like martial arts, but maybe I'm reading that wrong. But what do you mean by an internal art?
I'll tell you how I came to that notion. I've done a lot of workshops all around the world in different companies and cultures. And part of the workshop, we ask leaders to think of a challenging organizational problem that they're dealing with, or maybe that they have dealt with, or that they expect to deal with soon. And then to design a conversation. Imagine they could talk with anybody in the organization and have that conversation, actually design, write out how they would begin the conversation, what their conversational strategy would be, and then how the other person would respond, and then a back and forth. It sort of take a couple of pages to really design the perfect conversation that would address this problem. We do that, then we look at them carefully. And we really examine all of these conversations. And then we say, well, first of all, how do you all think this would have gone? And when they stop to think about it, they realize many of these conversations that they had time to think through and design wouldn't actually produce the desired results. That got my attention. The other thing that got my attention is when we look closely at the moves that these leaders would make in these conversations, the things they'd said, compared to what they were actually thinking and feeling, there was often a big discrepancy, a big gap. And these are the same people who, before this exercise, have listed all of the things that go that you need for good collaboration: trust, honesty, respect for differences, good listening, understanding, and so forth. And yet in these exercises, when they really look closely, they see that they were violating many of these tenets that are shared around the world. Everybody has a pretty similar list. So that I realized at that point that people know what works. So something else is going on. It's not that we don't know what works. It's that we're not actually aware of what we're doing when we're under pressure in these difficult situations. We default to patterns that we've learned, things we say and ways that we manage ourselves that we think are effective. But then by these executives' own reckoning later on after the exercise, they say, wow, I had no idea. I thought I was doing all the right things and it was these other people that were messing it up and making things difficult. And so they thought they were doing things they weren't doing, and they weren't doing things they thought they were doing. That was a big light bulb for me. And I realized the problem is not that people don't know. There are a lot of books, workshops, all sorts of resources out there. The problem is they're not aware of what they're doing. And this applies to all of us. I'm not excluding myself too. When I'm under pressure, I know I'm going to default to some less than productive moves at times, hopefully less than I used to.
Yeah.
But you know, this is what we do. We're not aware of what we're actually doing in real time. So until we start to gain more awareness, i.e. practice together to see, oh, I see what I just said actually could very easily trigger this person who I care about and know and respect, but trigger them into defensiveness or feeling like I'm not trusting them or I'm challenging who they are as a person and so forth. And we all are doing this. It's like a big billiards game where we're all making these moves. We're not really aware we're making them, but things are going sideways and no one's quite sure why or what to do about it. So for me, gaining awareness of what we are doing, and that's the internal art. When I start to get a better handle on how I'm using my words, on where I'm placing my attention in a conversation, that's another big thing, is we have different ways of using our attention, which I learned in martial arts. And the way we're using our attention in a conversation can make a huge difference, just like it does on the Aikido mat. The other thing is that we have bodies. And we forget we have bodies. We're just walking brains. And everything, it's everything, a thought is everything. You know, what we think and say is all, is the end of the story, but it's not. We're emotional beings, we have bodies, we have nervous systems. And we can use the nervous system and our attention to gain more awareness of how we're feeling, what we're thinking, how we're impacting other people, how other people are impacting us. And that is actually transformative. When we start to gain real-time awareness of what's going on with us, with me, I'm going to be much more effective at working with you. And the beauty there is that I don't have to expend so much effort trying to change you, which is a fool's errand anyway.
Right.
I can't do that, nor can you change me if I don't want to be changed. And very, you know, most of us, we don't want our colleagues to be running around trying to change us all the time. Who wants that?
Right.
And yet that's how we spend a lot of our time in organizations, running around trying to convince and persuade and influence people without starting where we really need to be starting, which is I need to change myself, my way of being, my way of thinking, my way of speaking, my way of listening. And then really interesting things start to happen. When I start to shift my way of being, other people around me start to change too. They start to seem more receptive. If I'm more receptive, I start listening better. Other people tend to start listening better to me too. And this is because they also have a nervous system. And our nervous systems are really finely attuned to one another. So we're always reciprocating and kind of entraining ourselves with the people around us. And when we start to realize that, we gain a whole new handle on how to actually work with people. Wow, and it's not where we usually focus.
No, not at all. In fact, you're hitting on so many different things. I mean, you know, I sense a little bit of emotional intelligence there, right? Knowing your own emotions, knowing the emotions of being able to read the emotions of others. I hear nonverbal communication, which is a big part of what we have to be aware of as leaders. There's just so, the other thing is too, is that, you know, setting the tone, like, because we tend to be reflective on other people's emotions. And so our, especially as a leader, we set the tone for the organization. If we take a more listening tone, a more understanding tone, a more considering tone, then we notice everyone else's as well too. But if we're running around screaming and yelling, we got to get this done, it's due tomorrow, everyone else is running around panicked as well too. So all these things are tied into it. I like the idea of that you mentioned attention and the body and not forgetting those two important elements too. And I think that's something that you're right. I think we think of ourselves as floating brains, I think, a lot. And not only that, we're floating brains that whatever our thoughts in, we believe that the other person understood it 100% the way we thought of it in our brain, regardless of how we said it with our body language or our voice. And so that's another thing too, is the sender and the receiver, right? Of any message is going to be, there's going to be distortion there as well. What you meant and what they understood is always, there's always a gap there. So
I think inescapable.
So much to this. Yeah, so much to this that I really think you're right. It is an internal art. It is an art to this, to be good at it and to recognize what's really happening in the moment too, versus just reacting. And like you said, when we're under stress, we're just reacting to what's happening around us. And we're not really thinking through what's happening. But that's such a powerful idea and concept, because I think you're right. There's a lot of things that are happening when we're trying to work with other people, for sure. Even, you know, I was thinking too, even with our spouses, even with our children, even with our neighbor, right? You know, these are the similar things, right? We're in conflict.
It's all the same. Yeah, it is all the same, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You talked about, in the book, you talked about three conversations of organizational collaboration. Could you tell us a little bit about those three conversations and why they're so important?
Yeah, to get things done with people, we have to solve problems. We have to make commitments to one another so we can get more done than any of us can do by ourselves. But to know how to commit ourselves and to know what are meaningful goals and how to make good decisions, we first have to learn together. We have to know what is going on here. And we have to be able to overcome the blindness that we each bring to the table. And it's inescapable. It's not a shortcoming of any one person. It's a generic shortcoming that we all have. We are all blind more than we see. And in today's world, there is so much more information out there that it's much harder to really navigate than it used to be. I mean, in 100, 150 years ago, maybe you didn't need to know quite as much. There wasn't as much to know about what was going on in the marketplace and the environment and technology and so forth. There were different challenges back then. But today, we all have our individual blind spots, but more importantly, we all are very limited in what we can know. So it's really shifted the need to be able to learn together effectively. That's a critical leadership skill. And that's a particular kind of conversation. I call it the learning conversation. It's where we learn how to relate to information effectively, to listen well, to raise and encourage dissenting views, to compare dissenting views, a lot of opportunity for constructive conflict that we were talking about earlier. And if we're able to learn well together, the output of that is that we are changed as a result of the conversation. If everyone left the conversation coming out the same that they went in, that would have been a failed conversation. And that's the kind of conversation that a lot of people have. That's why they hate meetings a lot. That's one of the reasons they hate meetings, is because nothing happens. Nobody seems to really come out differently. And so the goal of a learning conversation is that we come out knowing more and thinking better than we did before. And when that happens, we are able to make better decisions. And that takes us to the design conversation. And the design conversation is where we make decisions, where we set goals, we determine strategies, and decide what's important to measure and how are we going to measure it, do all of that stuff that, you know, leaders know about. And but when decisions don't go well, or goals aren't very effectively established, or strategies aren't well matched to the task, it's often because folks didn't learn well, or don't know how to learn when they encounter these obstacles and they see things are not going well. Then you have to have a learning conversation to figure out what's going on. So you have a learning conversation that leads to a good design conversation. And from there, it's time to move into where everybody wants to get to, which is to the action, to execution. And I call this the fulfillment conversation. And the reason I call it that is because execution, as I see it, is all about making commitments to one another. In other words, we make promises to one another. I'm going to do this for you, John. You're going to be my customer for this, and I'm going to do this by this time. And I need to make sure that the promises I make to you actually satisfy you at the end of the day. And then in the very next conversation, you might be making a promise to me, regardless of hierarchy. Promises are made regardless of hierarchy throughout organizations all the time. And there's an art to making and managing good promises. And the reason I call it the fulfillment conversation is because execution happens and accountability happens when we fulfill promises that we've made to other people inside the company, outside the company, and when the people who have made promises to us do the same. So these three conversations, you know, in the abstract, they go from learning to design to fulfillment. In reality, we're cycling through all of these three conversations all of the time. And we just need to understand how to have these conversations go well. And when we do, when we recognize and identify these conversations, I don't think we're doing a very good job learning here, John. Let's focus on comparing what we're both seeing in the data, because we're looking at the same things, but we're kind of operating on different interpretations. So let's share our interpretations and see what we think. And that'll probably lead to some new decisions and to new promises. So it's an interplay between these conversations. And of course, our attention and our bodies are always present in these conversations along with our words.
Yeah, I go back to thinking about my days on the submarine. I can identify each one of these three conversations that we had, you know, in terms of a lot of times we would drill in practice and it was this learning, you know, we would debrief like after something or like, okay, what happened? You know, we completely missed, you know, we did something wrong. So we were having that learning conversation. Then, you know, we would practice enough where we knew each other. Then we would have an event like we're pulling into a place we've never, you know, coming into an inlet we've never been there before. So we're going to get together. That's a design conversation. All right, we're going to someplace new. We've never done it before. What are the concerns? What are the challenges? What are you going to do? Right. And then it's like, okay, hey, you know, we're gonna you know, put the maneuvering watch at 8 a.m. and now it's action time. And now we've got headphones on, we're talking to each other. We've already had the design conversation. We've already had a learning conversation. We already know what everybody's role is in this. And so now we're executing like a fine, you know, like a fine oiled machine at this point because we've had those conversations. So I can really relate to this. But when I think about my days in corporate, 22 years, I can't remember any time where those things were working well. So what I sense is that this book is very important. What I sense is what you're talking about is critical for businesses and organizations if you want to be effective in terms of collaboration and getting things done, for sure. Absolutely. Makes a lot of sense.
You know, I love that example you gave. I want to have more conversations with you. I have a sense that you have a lot of really great stories and examples that could bring this way of thinking to life, because you lived that. And
Cool. Again, it's easy for me to relate because I've actually been on a team that collaborated really well. So it's like, oh yeah, this is what we did, you know? Mm-hmm. And so it's neat to hear that what you have presented, I've lived it, you know? And so it makes so much sense. So this is fantastic, Grayson. What final message would you like to leave with our listeners?
Final message. When you're next find yourself at an impasse, having a tough conversation or project is just stuck and you're not sure where to go, hit the pause button, take a break, and see if you can shift focus for even just 30 seconds to yourself. What's going on in your body? What stories are you telling yourself about the situation, about the other people, about yourself? Just take a break, disengage long enough to check in with yourself, take a breath or two, and see if that may open up some new opportunities.
Powerful advice.
Because that's where the action is. The action is in here. It's not out there where we usually think it is.
Absolutely. Like you said, we spend our lifetime trying to change people. We're the only person we really can affect is right here. So it's ourselves. And take you know, what can you do to yourself to make a bigger impact on others? I think that's really the question. And that's such a great thing to think about. The book is called Full Contact Performance. It's all about collaboration. So Grayson, how can people find out more about you and this new book?
Oh, the book is available anywhere online, Amazon, Barnes and Noble, your local bookseller. And I'd love to hear from folks. They can reach me at fullcontactinstitute.com. And my email is grayson@fullcontactinstitute.com.
Well, perfect. We're going to put links in the show notes for all of Grayson's resources. And again, listeners, if you're listening in and you're saying, wow, this has really resonated with me. I've got real collaboration issues in my organization. I really need to think through what Grayson's talking about. I got to think through these three conversations. I got to think through attention or my body, all these things that we talked about. I highly recommend you reach out to Grayson, get an expert, talk to someone that has been thinking through this and can help you resolve the issues that you're struggling with. And again, I highly recommend pick up this book, Full Contact Performance, if you want to understand collaboration in a deeper way. Grayson, I want to thank you for coming on the show and sharing this important topic and all of your knowledge around it.
John, I really enjoyed it. Great talking with you. Thank you.
I enjoyed it as well. Thank you. Well, that's it for today. Thank you for listening to Deep Leadership. If you like this podcast, please subscribe and share so we can continue to build a world with better bosses. Until next time, this is John Rennie saying take care and lead well.
Thank you for listening to Deep Leadership.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for all you do.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode. For more information and updates, please visit our website at www.deepleadershippodcast.com or johnsrennie.com. Until next time, take care.
Welcome to Transforming 45, the podcast that celebrates the incredible power of passionate voices. I'm your host, Lisa Boat. Join me in conversation with heart-led humans who share their deeply personal stories of transformation. Transforming 45 is here to uplift, connect, and remind you that it's never too late to write your next chapter. So get ready to be inspired, empowered, and transformed. Join me in this community where through powerful storytelling, we heal and reclaim our inherent magic.
Electric Acid.
Hi, I'm Lisa Godet, host of Her Extraordinary Life by Design podcast, where we celebrate women who are shaping their lives one extraordinary day at a time. I speak with women from all over the world about what they do and how they are passionately pursuing their dreams and creating meaningful impacts on their communities. So come join us and learn about all there is to learn about these extraordinary women.